Hey, welcome to another edition of the Ascension podcast stream and everything else, etc. Joe Gray here. Gord is also in the office taking a nap, which is always good. With us today is Teddy Wilson of Radical Reports. And before we get started, Teddy, tell us about your experience in the military and how you've been able to transition and translate that into your career outside of the military.
Well, I was served in the military for 8 years, from 1999 to 2007, in the U.S. Navy. I was crypto. I was a SIGINT analyst over that time period. And I think one of the most useful skills that I learned during my time in the Navy that really transitioned well to both being a journalist, but also being a researcher and doing this kind of OSINT research, was learning how to have the patience and attention to detail and for doing the kind of tedious work and kind of data-oriented analysis that's required for doing this kind of research, right? Training yourself to be able to spend several hours, you know, coming through whether it's data or public records or campaign finance reports or any other kind of research, it can be difficult. And it can be something that I think a lot of people don't necessarily have the capacity for. And so I think, you know, spending several years spending 8 to 12 hours a day on either watch floors or in a small compartment on a Navy ship doing signals analysis for hours on end, I think kind of gave me that kind of skill to be able to really focus in and do deep dive research in that kind of way.
Welcome everyone to the live stream of the Ascension. Today we have Teddy Wilson with us. Teddy maintains a publication called Radical Reports. It's something that I read myself close to daily, to be entirely honest. Some days I just don't have the bandwidth, but there's a lot of really meaningful research there. Teddy puts a lot of care and effort into it, and it's definitely worth taking a look at. About Teddy, he is a journalist, researcher, and consultant with more than a decade of experience in covering the U.S. radical right. He was previously a staff reporter at Rewire News Group, research analyst at Political Research Associates, and U.S. investigations editor at Open Democracy. He's currently the publisher of Radical Reports, which provides research, analysis, and intelligence on the U.S. radical right. Just before we went live, Teddy was telling us about his time in the Navy as a crypto technician. Please correct me if I was wrong saying technician as opposed to officer. I don't know if you were enlisted or officer, but it's always good to have another fellow veteran on, because I also was in the Navy on submarines. So the cross correlation is a little bit different, but it's still useful in that transition where you were used to doing the same repetitive, similar to repetitive tasks in very patience demanding environments. My big thing that I picked up was cross training, because, you know, on a submarine, you can't call the fire department, so you have to know how to do the person sitting next to you's job. But anyway, welcome, Teddy. How's it going?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on. It's a real pleasure. And yes, I was enlisted. I was not an officer, so no worries about that. And yeah, I mean, I'm from the surface side of things, and so you know, it's a kind of a different Navy, I think, in many ways. But I was friends and colleagues with a lot of sub writers. I was roommates with one actually for a time. So yeah, I think I'm used to how weird y'all guys can be. So
hey, I mean, we are weird. we are a special type of creature. That's basically the best way I could put it. You know, that we think a certain way, we act a certain way, and it just is what it is. But I am seeing a lot of people from the submarine force working their way into maybe not necessarily as much to the cyber side, but or to the intel side, but a lot coming into cyber, which is probably a scary thing, but at the same time, I guess a good thing. But anyway, I'm going to stop the screen share momentarily. And basically, you know, what I'm going to start this fairly easily. What is your favorite OSINT resource?
Oh, my goodness.
I said I was going to start it easy, but it's probably the hardest question you'll ever get.
Right. I think for me, it might be the public records tools that people tend to forget about or may not necessarily come forefront to mind. I think because there's so much information you can gather through public records, like corporate records, right? Searching through corporate records in state databases, or another good example is campaign finance records. There's a lot of interesting information within both the state and federal campaign finance databases, and not just about who's donating the money to which candidate, but all kinds of information from what vendors are being used and where else the money is being spent. But for me, I think using databases such as on the county levels, most counties have available databases for property tax records. And so being able to use those to track who owns what piece of property, you can find out a lot of interesting information about individuals. If you're looking at who owns a house or an apartment, to what companies own or LLCs might own a particular business or what have you. I think that's one of those places where I think a lot of people that haven't spent as much time doing that kind of investigative work might not necessarily think to go there. But yeah, I mean, there's just so many, especially now that so much of that is now online, right? Those kinds of public records were always essentially available, right? But in past years, you would have to actually go down to the property tax record, to the tax office, whether it's the county clerk or county tax collector or whoever, and actually go physically look at the records. But now everything is basically online. And so there's that. But also, I think things like Google Earth can be surprisingly useful for trying to kind of understand the geography of a place and where things are in relation to one another. So I think, yeah, there's just so many useful tools for doing kind of OSINT research for a variety of research targets. So yeah, I think those are the two that come to mind most readily.
Absolutely. And I'm right there with you. You know, I'll just name drop some of the things that I'm pretty sure you're referring to here. You're talking things like FEC, and then of course at the state level and the county level. And, you know, I will caution viewers and listeners, when you're dealing with the state and the county levels, not all states and counties are equally digitized. And some of them still want you to come down to the courthouse and fill out a form for their own accountability. Some also will charge you a processing fee. So be aware of that. And I know some people subscribe to the idea of it's not OSINT if you have to pay for it, but I disagree with that. There's a threshold. Everyone has a different threshold, but some things are OSINT that you do have to pay for. When we're talking about like firehose APIs for social media and you're talking tens of thousands of dollars a month, no, that's no longer OSINT. That's a closed source because it's prohibitively expensive. But, you know, knowing you used to be at Open Democracy, then, you know, that makes me think of Open Corporates and Little Sis. And then you also have things like Pacer or something that I've previously done a video on in Judy Records, which I'm not sure if you've used Judy Records very much or if you have, that you're aware, but Judy Records was taken down for a while and it's finally back.
No, that's not one of the ones I've used. I think there's a few other that I would name drop like you in a minute, but I did want to kind of touch on a couple things that you mentioned. One is the cost, right? And I think especially when it comes to public records, on specifically the state level, there's a few things I think people should be aware of. One, all 50 states have 50 different laws governing their open records, right? What is available what kind of records are available for requesting, what kind of material is sensitive and not available, how much time a state agency has to respond to an open records request. And then there's also cost included. So usually it depends wildly by state, but some states, you know, here in Texas, if you do an open records request of one of the state agencies, there generally isn't a cost. Most of the time, the records you get back within, I think it's 30 days, and they're digitized and they don't charge you anything. I think places like Missouri and Florida and Georgia, I've encountered various costs. But one way to kind of mitigate that is usually if you communicate openly with the person in charge of the public records request for whatever agency. Usually it's either specifically a public records officer, or maybe it's a media contact person. A lot of times you can work with that person and either negotiate down the price. I've been able to do that just from talking with the people governing the public records and negotiate that price down and say, well, that's too much. I don't think it's necessarily going to take this many hours for you to collect this kind of information. Or you can work with them to kind of help you tailor your request down. I think it's important to kind of use those personal relationships to your advantage, especially because a lot of these people aren't necessarily treated well. Like a lot of state employees aren't used to getting treated very well when it comes to these things. So I think just using a little bit of humanity can get you pretty far. Those other ones that you named, I think all those have been really helpful. Let me look up. There's another service that I've used as far as court records. I've used Pacer quite a bit. I think Pacer is a pretty decent bargain for the price, you know, because it charges you by like how many documents. And if you don't reach a certain threshold, basically you don't have to spend any money.
So if you do 31 pages per month, you never get charged.
Right. Which is, I mean, I think it depends on how much you're going to be using it. But I think if you use it intermittently, it's not bad. Another service I would recommend folks look into if they're interested in court documents and researching legal documents is Court Listener, which is there is a free version where you can search. I can't remember the amount of times per month, but you're not paying for it. If you donate, I think it's $5 or $10 a month, you get unlimited use because it's a nonprofit and it's basically staffed by volunteers. And so Court Listener has been a really useful resource for me, particularly when it comes to all the research I've done around the people that have been arrested and charged with relation to the January 6th insurrection, people that have court cases related to the Capitol riot. That's been really useful for me. Mm-hmm. The only kind of mitigating factor is you don't get access to all of the documents. Like, you can see all the dates and motions and stuff and everything that's happened with the court case. There's like a timeline of events and everything. And there are some documents, like generally speaking, if there's an indictment or what have you, those are generally available. But I would guess about 75% of the documents aren't available, but they usually do have like a helpful link that says, if you want access to this, here's the PACER link to it. So I think Court Listener has been a really useful tool for me for legal documents and tracking court cases. And if you create an account, you can track court cases too. So I get updates anytime there's new filings or what have you for the court cases I've been following to email to me. So that's a nice little feature of it too.
Absolutely. So two things that come from this immediately to mind. So what you're saying is you don't always see the complete picture from any one particular platform. You kind of have to do that inference and aggregation across the board.
Oh, definitely. I think one really good example of that too is, I guess it's not technically OSINT, but anyone that does research into legislation that is being introduced and considered in state legislatures, right? There's several different services that provide monitoring and use various APIs to track and pull in all the legislation from each of the 50 state legislatures. LegiScan is a really great tool. Open States isn't as good as it used to be when it was part of the Sunlight Network. But even as good as LegiScan is, there's things that it's going to miss. It's not always going to update perfectly. Every time there's going to be information that the scrapers might miss or misread or whatever. Like there's always going to be missing information when you're talking about these tools that collect, right, and scrape information from other websites. And so I think it's great to have like a central tool that you use, but always I think to have redundancy and go look at the actual state legislative page of any kind of legislation you're looking at or whatever. That's also where you're going to be able to access, like if there's archive video of state legislative hearings, or if there's uploaded documents, PDF documents of hearing testimony or what have you. But going back to a comment you made earlier about kind of the differences in quality of the state's legislative web pages, they are vastly different. And I think you mentioned in the introduction, I worked at Rewire News, and part of my job was to track state legislation. And I helped with my colleagues, and we created this big legislative database of all the kinds of legislation we were tracking. And so I've literally look through every legislative website of all 50 pages, all 50 states, and there's no kind of correlation between the kind of state it is and how good the website it is. Like, whether it's mostly run by Republicans, mostly run by Democrats, if it's, you know, has more larger cities, if it's a state that is more rural than other states, there's no correlation or causation between the quality of those state legislative websites and what the state is. Texas has one of the best legislative websites with archive videos and audio and all kinds of documents, and you can track legislation. It's a relatively easy webpage to kind of navigate, whereas Alabama, I think, has had, unless they've updated this year, has had one of the worst legislative websites I've ever seen. I remember the first time I was kind of trying to find bills on there, the thought that came to mind is like, this is like somebody made a website, and this is back in like 2015, with like GeoCities and MS Paint. It was just like the worst thing I've ever seen.
So, I was going to ask if it was a fork of MySpace.
Yeah, I mean, so yeah, I think, and anybody that works in this space, in the research space, understands that you're never going to be able to get everything you need in one place. Like, you're going to have to look in many different places. And oftentimes, when you uncover research or information, it's going to lead you to someplace maybe you haven't been before to gain access to information. I think there's, over the years of doing investigative reporting and research, and even like things like opposition research, I've learned so much about where to get information and kind of strategies and techniques to get information. And I'm still learning. Like, you're never going to know everything about where to get all the information. So yeah.
I cannot agree with that more, because something that I preach on the streams in my trainings, anytime I give a talk, if someone just asks me about it, basically, you know, I struggle with the term guru or expert about OSINT, about anything intelligence oriented, but specifically OSINT, because, you know, I will acknowledge that there's one person that I would call an expert, and that's Michael Basil. I refer to him as the OG of OSINT. But at the end of the day, you know, we have to be students of the game, because things are always changing. The technologies are changing, terms of service are changing, laws are changing, people are changing, and so on. So, you know, you really have to stay on top of it. And, you know, it warms my heart that you would echo that sentiment without any prompting of that whatsoever. So I'm not the crazy one saying you can never be an expert in this field, but take this training to learn how to be closer to an expert. The second thing I have to ask about with relation to public, well, actually, you know what, I'm going to table that one for a second. When you talk about having to further cross-correlate, you know, you talk about one platform to another platform, and then, you know, do you find a lot of value in having to go and look at the social media accounts, both the person and the official social media accounts of the people voting on or proposing specific legislation to see what they are really trying to get at with it?
I mean, it depends. I think at this point, especially when you're talking about not just politicians, but any public figure, so much of their social media is curated and very carefully kind of published and you know, survey tested or what have you, right? There's the, with some exceptions, right? People that are maybe insurgent candidates, or people that are not as prominent within either party. I think the most useful thing about social media with regards to specifically looking at political candidates, or even just anybody in general, is I think it's a useful way to build kind of a network analysis of who they have relationships with, right? Even though maybe what they say on social media may be curated and carefully thought out, right? There are plenty of people that are kind of quote unquote firebrands that are going to say more outlandish things. And even that can be calculated. But I think one of the most visual things about mining social media is you're going to find a lot of evidence of who they're connected with, right? Whether they post about they're going to some conference or meeting with people, or there's photos of them with individuals, right? Or where they've been and what they've done. I think not so much about what they say, but what they do. Like, we leave a digital footprint of where we've been and who we've interacted with, I think. And I've one of the more useful tools that I've used recently is looking at Venmo. Like, I think that's been a surprising kind of wealth of information about people. Because if you don't set it to private, right, then you can see any transactions you make with anybody through Venmo. You can see all the contacts with Venmo. And the interesting thing about Venmo is, if you download it, right, and you open it up, you open an account, all of the people that are contacts in your phone through your the numbers that you have are automatically added to your as friends in your Venmo account. So if you're looking at somebody's Venmo account and who they're friends with, there's a high probability that those people are saved as contacts in that person's phone and whoever the target is. So I think social media can be used as a real kind of it's useful in many different ways, but I think I've focused less on kind of what people say on social media and more kind of where their footprints are and what can that tell you about who they're connected with. I think that's been a kind of a much more valuable kind of piece of data to mine.
I would agree with that, especially with the maintaining their public image. Do you ever run into issues where you try to collect some sort of record or something and you find that it's past the retention window?
Not very often. I think most of the time the records I'm looking for are relatively new. I occasionally go looking for kind of historic records that might be kind of several years old. I think several years ago, I was looking for historic kind of, not historic records, but records of around who is testifying for and in favor of bills in the Texas legislature. So this is, I think, 2016, and I was looking for records and information about bills that were being considered like in 2009 or 2010. And none of that stuff was online, but all of it was within the state legislature's archive. So I actually had to go down to the Capitol in Austin and request access to the archive to get those kinds of things. I have found kind of roadblocks to other pieces of information in that same area. So it depends on the state, but in most states, state lawmakers have to file a financial disclosure form, right? I think Congress, people in Congress do.
Supreme Court justices do not, remember?
Well, you know, that's a gray area, right? You know, and so these disclosures usually have, you know, lots of information about what their net wealth is, if they have investments, what kind of property they own, if they're on corporate boards, stuff like that, right? And in Texas, that's not available online. You actually have to physically go down to the state legislature and request physical copies from I'm trying to remember the name of the entity that runs that, but like the archivist or whoever runs that. It's been a few years since I went down there. I think the Texas Tribune back in 2013, 2015 actually went down there, got all the financial disclosure forms for every state lawmaker and published it online. So it was actually searchable and usable, but that's pretty rare. That there's not many news organizations that have the bandwidth to be able to do that. And so, I mean, that's one of the things you're going to run into kind of roadblocks like that sometimes. And I think it depends on what it is. But I think in a lot of times it might be worth it to actually physically go somewhere to get that kind of record. I think another place where you might have to physically go places is when you're looking for If you want to request public records from like local law enforcement, like whether you're kind of a county sheriffs or local police departments, a lot of times that you will be required to have to like actually go there in person. Those kind of law enforcement agencies, especially on the local level, are much more difficult to deal with as far as getting public records. It just depends. But I think kind of being patient and being tenacious about getting the information you want is probably the most useful kind of tool. I remember a few years back, I filed a public records request with an agency, and I'd forgotten about it until it showed up in my inbox like 2 months later. So it was like a nice surprise. And so sometimes you just got to be patient and kind of work the system. I think, yeah, if you're tenacious and patient, you can always get the information you need.
Would you agree with the phrase, sometimes it's not what you ask, but it's how you ask it?
Definitely. Definitely. As I mentioned earlier, if you work with the people that maintain those public records, asking nicely can get you a long ways. Anyway, as I mentioned offline, I do have to get going. I gotta jump on another podcast quickly.
Absolutely. And here are the links to Teddy's outlets, so his Radical Reports Substack, as well as Radical Reports and Teddy's Twitter. So definitely go give him a follow him on Substack. It's definitely been a pleasure, Teddy. I definitely want to have you back when we can have some more time to really distill some stuff, because I there's a lot of things going on that I really want to pick your brain about. I think this was a really good kind of primer for the audience, and I thank you for your time, and I will see you around.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'd be glad to come on anytime. So
awesome.
But for now, I'll see you and everybody else and that's watching on Twitch. I'll see y'all later. You can come find me on my Substack.
Sounds good. Take it easy.
If you are interested in on-demand training, check out the Ascension Academy. Visit academy.theascension.com. If you're interested in purchasing courses from the Ascension, you can do so in a variety of ways. The Ascension store, which is at theascension.com/courses/store. You can purchase bundles, individual courses, and placeholders here. If you would like a custom bundle, please email bundles@theascension.com for custom bundles or questions. You can follow us on Twitch. osint.mobi/twitch is the redirect. osint.mobi/youtube is the YouTube redirect. And also we maintain a couple of communities. On Discord, we maintain the Ascension Discord, which is osint.mobi/discord. And we are also members of Ascension Intelligence on LinkedIn, which you can join via osint.mobi/ascension intelligence. There are the links to my social media as well as the Ascensions. Thanks for watching. Don't forget to like this video, comment, share, subscribe, and hit that notification bell.